What is your sense of Bohm's current headspace, and do you still intend to play him tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, he's playing tomorrow. And I think he's in a good spot. He was just in there hitting in the cages and getting his work in. I'm not sure if he's going to hit on the field today or not. So, but, yeah, I think he's fine.
And will both Stott and Marsh sit tomorrow?
Oh, we'll see.
We'll see when that lineup comes out. Here's what we do know. Welcome back to the Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gillette. We know Alec Bohm is going to be back in there. 215-592-9494 to join us. Evan Roberts will from up in New York at 11:30. All your calls out there. The Phillies still in the driver's seat of the series. I can't believe how many people don't trust Dole today. I trust him. But Hugh, it's going to be interesting today to watch Alec Bohm. So Topper said yesterday Bohm will be back in there. Right? He'll start. He'll be at third base.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question, though, because I'm now starting to wonder about Alec Bohm's future. And let's just keep it short term, like the rest of this postseason run. We'll get to the offseason when we get there. But I'm just based on him taking him out after one game, based on how he's hit down the stretch of the season, I think Alec Bohm is and should be playing for his starting spot tonight. He's in against a lefty who usually hits lefties. If he goes out there tonight and goes 0 for 4 and he looks like he's about to cry and throw his helmet after every out, he does look like that a lot, then I don't think it's a lock he's starting moving forward. I think he's a day-to-day kind of guy, the way, you know, Sosa's a day-to-day guy and Stott's a day-to-day guy and Marsh's a day-to-day guy. I think he falls into that category again, unless in the Harper, Turner, Schwarber, Castellanos group that you know are going to play every day. Hugh, what do you think on this? As he said he's going to put him back in tonight, do you think he should be playing for his job tonight?
I don't think so, and it didn't sound like that. When Topper had that press conference and he mentioned him, it didn't sound to me like he was in any jeopardy of losing his day-to-day job. I look at him like this. It was a time where, was it him and Stott? They kind of carried the team. I think it was last year early in the season where they kind of were the guys that kind of were the catalyst for this team. So I don't think that he's a guy that you look at and say, okay, if he doesn't have a good series or he doesn't have a good outing tonight, that you're going to sit him down. I think he's considered the future of the squad.
I'm not sure about that anymore. And look, you're right about that. At one point he was hot, but then the same thing happened to Bryce's Stott. They lost confidence in him.
Yeah.
Sosa gets playing time over him now. I look at it like this. Has Alec Bohm really gotten that much better, or did he have a great month and a half to start the season? Look at Alec Bohm's numbers since the middle of May. He has not hit well. I mean, since the end of August, he's hitting .238. You go back to the middle of May, he hit .255 with almost no power the final, you know, 3.5 months of the season. And since he came back from his hand injury, he's hitting .170. I think Alec Bohm tonight is and should be playing for his everyday spot. And what I mean by that is not that he sits the bench the rest of October.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't hit tonight or he doesn't look the part, right? You know, sometimes you can hit the ball and it goes right through someone. I just mean if he has bad at-bats, if he doesn't play well tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I think he then becomes just like Stott, just like Sosa, just like Marsh, just like Hayes, like he's in every other day or based on the matchup proposition. Because, Hugh, to your point of maybe he was looked at as the future, right? He was in the All-Star game this year. Earlier this season, I think we kind of put him in the same category as Harper, Turner, Castellanos, Bohm, right? They played every day, no matter what. That feels like it's a more shaky ground than it used to be.
I don't think so. I think the other day when he pulled him out and he had a little temper tantrum, he's an emotional kid.
But he's not a kid. He's 20,
well,
almost
when
29.
When I say that, I know that irritates you when I say that.
It does, because we talk about him like he's a rookie.
But he still has emotional moments. I feel like he is a part of the bigger picture when it comes to this when it comes to this Phillies team.
I'm not sure anymore. I mean, he might be. I mean, he'll probably be here next year unless they trade him away. But he's 28 years old. I can't talk about him like he's a kid anymore.
No, I mean, I get it. But he's still out there throwing temper tantrums like he's a little bit immature.
Well,
is immature better word
like
to
that.
Describe
yeah.
immature?
Yeah, yeah. It feels like he loses composure sometimes at big moments. And I understand why they want to try to get him right. Because when he's right, to your
he's
point,
right.
He was an all-star. I mean, he was leading the baseball in RBI to start the season. 215-592-9494. Kyle, where do you come down on this? I mean, the Bohm thing is, it's such an interesting thing because Topper took him out so quickly into the postseason. So now it feels like, all right, well, what if he stinks tonight? Is he back in tomorrow, or is this a day-to-day proposition now? Where are you on Bohm?
So, I mean, at the very least, he's playing for his job in the NLDS, right? I mean, with so few games in the series and so few games left, they can't afford to have a guy out there who's an automatic out with one swing of the bat. I mean, let's be honest about Alec Bohm. That's what he is. And not only is he that, but he's kind of a baby. It's just bringing the rest of the team down when he goes and mopes and slams his helmet in the dugout. I can't have that around the rest of my guys who just admitted after that game that they were a little tight and needed to break out of that and get loose, and now they're feeling good. I can't have him bringing the whole team down. And then beyond that, like, they have a guy in the system that can come up and play third base eventually, maybe not next season, but eventually. And they can't go into next season with having two question marks in Boehm and Bryson Stott in the infield if they're going to be serious about contending. So I think both in the short term and in the long term, Boehm in a way is sort of playing for his job.
I think he is. I think his future here is on shaky ground now. And it's hard to ignore when you look at the numbers. Like, sometimes a great April can kind of fool you for an entire season. Look at Boehm's numbers after April. They're very, just okay. Like, just fine. Nothing special. But he had such an amazing April, beginning of May. His numbers look good for the entire season. I thought it was telling Topper took him out. He's back in there tonight. Should he be playing for his job, his starting spot? 215-592-9494. All right, let's go back to the phones here. Driver's seat, are the Phillies in it? And what do you think about Boehm? Is he playing for his starting spot tonight? Should he be? Jeff in Wilmington. What's up, Jeff?
What's up, guys?
Hey, Jeff. What's up, pal?
So I think the Phillies are in the driver's seat, but it's kind of like in the 70s when kids didn't have to wear seatbelts or nobody did. And the kids are in the back of the car and the mom's trying to drive and she's got to turn around and smack the kids like, get back.
Oh, the good old days.
That's the Mets. Yeah, they're in the back seat. Yeah. Just jumping up.
Me and my brother are only a year and a half apart, so we were smacked a few times because of that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I told Kyle, if the Phillies had won the first game and lost the second one, then I'd say the Mets are in the driver's seat because they've got a win and they're going back home. But I give the edge to the Phillies right now, and they're going to have to hit, and I do trust Nola. Probably going to give up two or three runs. I mean, he kind of always does. So, you know, I don't – that guy, first guy, Chuck, that called talking about spending $9,000 on the Phillies, his money would be better spent somewhere else because it would probably make him happier. He doesn't seem like a very happy fan.
He didn't. No, he seemed very – he almost seemed pessimistic about their chances here to finish this thing off. Yeah,
I do like their chances. You know, obviously, ideally – taking two up there, but that's a big ask.
It is. Now, if they get tonight, we're gonna ask that tomorrow. And Jeff, we appreciate it. It is a big ask to get both up there. If they, would you feel good about a split? I would. If they get one of the next two and get it back here for Wheeler in Game Five.
Yeah, but I want the one tonight, though. Definitely want the one tonight.
Me
I mean,
too.
Because it makes the momentum to me, the pressure. If you get the one tonight, then the pressure's back on the Mets, in my opinion. Well, so you have to get the one tonight.
Ideally, they get the one tonight, but, I mean, a split is a split no matter which way they get it.
Yep.
And you know what they say about momentum? It's only as good as your starting pitcher the next day.
And
we'll have Zach freaking Wheeler at home. I mean, I know that game ended, but I will take my chances with Wheeler versus the bullpen game at home a second time.
This does, I mean, the way the Phillies set it up, it is advantageous to them with the way the days off are, the way Wheeler, you know, pitched in that game one. He gets to pitch again in game five. He'll be ready for that game. I guess they'll go with Senga again in game five. We'll see if he's more built up. But yeah, I mean, if the Phillies could get this back here in game five, they will all sign up for that. Would I like to win it in four? Sure. But I'll sign up for that. Charlie's in Yardley. What's up, Charlie?
Hey, I as much as I would love to win it in four, that's just not. I don't see that happening. Like, Ranger has not inspired confidence since he came back whenever he came back from. But if you win tonight, the Mets are going to have to throw everything at you in game four. I remember some past postseason game when Smoltz was doing the commentary, he would say, oh, yeah, you have two games. Like, if you have two games left in a series, you have two games to win just one. But in reality, when you're facing elimination, that team is just going to throw everything at you. And so, especially if the Phillies win tonight, which I think they will, the Mets will throw everything at them in game four to make sure it goes back to game five.
Well, they will. I mean, they'll have to use every reliever they have. Now, there's a day off for both teams heading into game five, but this Mets bullpen, Charlie, I felt it watching Diaz kind of fall apart in the eighth inning Sunday.
They might be leaking oil
a
little bit.
They're tired. Yeah, they've pitched a lot the last week. So the more we could get them into the game, even tonight, like the quicker we get Manaea out, that affects those guys tomorrow on top of it. And then, you know, obviously game five after. It's a cumulative effect for them.
Yeah, on the Boehm thing, if he doesn't show up tonight and there's a righty starter going forward, I think you have to put Cody Clemens in there. Because Cody Clemens, maybe it's just because he's coming in for Rojas and we have such little expectation for Rojas at-bats, but he always seems to put together a good at-bat in a key situation. Even when it was garbage time in game one, he drove in that run to make it 6-2. And even when it was just a little squibber in between short and third, he put together a good at-bat. He's been putting together good at-bats. If there's a righty going forward, Bohm doesn't show up tonight, Cody Clemens has to be going forward. And I have one more question for you guys, actually, before I go. How much do you really think the shadows are playing into the Phillies at-bats? Because in game one, like, they were but game two, they didn't start hitting. And I heard a few guys say it in the post game of, like, once those shadows went away and the sun started to set, like, their offense started to get going. I mean, that's an interesting thing to keep looking at going forward, because a bunch of guys keep saying their at-bats improve as the sun goes down. Do you think there's something to that, or are they just, like making up excuses for their poor at-bats?
It's a good question, Charlie. Great phone call. We appreciate it. I do think there's something to it. Now, they got to stop saying it because no one wants to hear excuses. I mean, no one's interested in that.
Yeah, not in that situation, especially when the other team is dealing with the same thing.
But I do think there's something to it. I mean, you saw it in game one. The Mets also put together better at-bats in the eighth inning. Now, they were better than the Phillies in the eighth inning. They got five runs. The Phillies got one the entire game, or two. They got the Clemens run in the ninth. I do think there's something to it. Now, we'll see how the shadows affect today up in New York, today and tomorrow at 5 o'clock. I'm not sure. And I have to kind of rack my mind to think about Phillies late afternoon games in New York over the years, or ones I've seen over the years. I don't think it's as drastic as here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, game five is slated to be, what, a 4 o'clock game on Friday? I'm skeptical of that, though. That probably would require other series to go deeper.
Well, they're all 1-1.
They are all 1-1.
That doesn't help our
case. That's a good point. And I guess what would those series be on Friday? I'm trying to think, like, what games they would be in.
Today's the NL.
Today's the
tomorrow's
NL.
Tomorrow's probably going to be AL again.
Tomorrow's AL game 3.
Yeah.
Thursday would be 4.
I'll double check.
Yeah, we'll find out. But if here's my thing on it. I think if the Padres or Dodgers win the next two, the Phillies might be the only game on Friday. In that case, it would go tonight. 215-592-9494. All right, your phone calls the other side. Evan Roberts joins at 11:30, so we can learn more about this bad experience he had in Philly.
Can't wait to hear that.
Ruben Amaro on why Bohm is very, very important to the success of this Phillies lineup. We'll play it next. Your calls, Midday Show, Sports Radio 94 WIP. And let's talk about my friends over at FanDuel. Get ready to tackle the NFL action with FanDuel in partnership with Valley Forge Casino, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers can bet $5 to get $300 in bonus bets if you win Thursday night. Give me San Francisco to win the game outright. I'll take an under on the game total and an anytime touchdown for Jordan Mays. Visit FanDuel.com/GIGLIO to make every moment more this season. FanDuel Sportsbook, the official partner of 94 WIP. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner. Welcome back, Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gill, you guys with us. 215-592-9494 as we get set for Game 3, Phillies and the Mets. 508 tonight up at Citi Field in New York. Afternoon show is going to be there with fans of Philly. I can't wait, and I believe the Phillies are still in the driver's seat in this series. Hugh not feeling the same. And Alec Bohm, should he be playing for a starting spot tonight? Topper has kind of opened this can of worms now. He said Bohm's back in there. All right, but does he have to perform to play tomorrow? That's what we find out tonight. 215-592-9494. Ruben Amaro yesterday on the morning show, interesting perspective on Bohm and why he's still really important in this thing. Here's Ruben. That was interesting hearing them talk about that, the emotional part of this, that he looks like he's in his head a little bit. I mean, I understand Ruben's point, and I think you made one similar here, that he's, if he gets right, he could still be really important, right? He was important early in the season. He, at one point, was one of their best hitters. He was an all-star. It's just, it's a little bit similar to last year. Now, he's better than Rojas, obviously, is way better as a hitter. But how long can you wait for someone to figure it out before going to somebody else when it's the playoffs? That I think, is what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I think, and he's one of the guys, like I said, it feels like he's one of the guys that you feel has a really bright future. And when you talk about how long you had to wait for somebody, it kind of feels to me, by what Ruben said and how Topper handled it, like he's the most complete guy that you feel is going to get there sooner than the other guys.
So maybe, but he already pushed the button, right? He benched them once. Like once you bench someone, you could do it again. It's not a big deal anymore. I'm looking at the numbers for Alec Bohm. Now, there was obviously a portion of time he missed in here because he had the hand injury. So I think we'd all agree Alec Bohm is like a doubles hitter, right? He's not a home run hitter. Do you know how many doubles he has since August 13th? Which is a long period of time, right? Again, he missed 2.5-3 weeks in there. But from August 13th through now, he has one double. One. He is hitting .204 since August 13th with 4 total extra base hits and one double. I mean, based on performance, he's not playing like an everyday player right now. So I'm not surprised we're here. And I do think tonight, if he doesn't hit or he has bad at-bats, I wouldn't be shocked. Now, one of our callers brought up the Clemens thing. Clemens is a butcher at third base, but he's a better hitter. I wonder if they would do it. Would you put Clemens at third base?
No, I don't think so. Because, like I said, I think that Bohm is the future.
But why?
Because he's had his moments, Joe. I understand what you're saying.
But why does the future matter now? I'm just talking about the playoffs.
No, he's in the future playoffs. Like, I mean, if you plan on going further, he's going to factor into that. I think he's had moments where you have to give him that at least. And like I said, when you talk about these players, he's one of the most complete that's closer. He's just a very emotional guy. You take some of that emotion out and you try to protect him from himself a little bit, I think he'll be fine.
I think he's emotional and he had one great month this year. I think he's an okay player, pretty good. But his numbers really are reliant on what he did in April. I mean, he's been abysmal since the beginning of August.
He's never really taken the next step that you wanted him to take.
We thought it was this year, April, and in the beginning of May.
And then the other thing is, because we're talking about now and in the future, and the future playoffs, I don't know if he's like built for postseason baseball. Like, mentally, he doesn't see, like, does he have one great playoff moment?
He hit the home run in the beginning of Game 7 last year.
Right.
That's it. I know. I mean,
and that was after he was horrible.
Have you ever looked at his playoff numbers? And it's been
probably putrid.
It's 2 years plus, obviously, the game on, game one of his at-bats. His playoff numbers quickly, then we'll go back to the phones. We're going to have Evan Roberts joining us coming up at 11:30. So he has played now 32 playoff games. He's hit .218 with a .644 OPS.
And he just puts together awful at-bats.
Yeah, he does.
Like, it's not bad luck. Like, he is swinging at the first pitch. He's not working any counts. Like, it's feeble.
I actually think the Clemens thing is more interesting than I even anticipate, because Sosa doesn't give you a platoon advantage. Like, he went to him the other day, but Sosa's going to play against lefties. Mm. I wonder if they could throw Clemens at third in a game. I mean, they did go to a World Series with Kyle Schwarber in left field. I mean, obviously, defense isn't the number one thing for this team.
Is it crazy to say I'm more confident that when he comes up to the plate, he could get a hit than Bohm right now?
It is not. Well, how about tonight? Once the lefty comes out tonight, is Clemens viable to come in as a pinch hitter?
If Bohm is doing the same crap where he's swinging first pitch, rolling one down to second baseman, then yeah.
We got
to
keep our eye on this one. This Bohm situation feels like it's a lot going on. Dustin is up next. What's up, Dustin?
Dustin.
Joey G. How are you, fellas?
Hey, Dustin. What's up, pal?
Dude, let me explain something to you. In the seventh inning in game two, the Mets did something that no one other than a Philadelphia fan became petrified of. They've awoken the beast. Our boys are coming out tonight, swinging for the fences, getting singles, getting doubles. They're going to come out. They were in a slump that first game, and I still kind of put the blame on Topper for game one, because Wheels was dealing. I understand he was at 111 pitches, but you got to keep the workhorse in there.
That's a lot of pitches,
that's
Dustin.
Lot,
he's never, ever thrown more than 120 in a game, ever.
Well, Joe, there's a first time for everything.
Well, hold on, Dustin. Let's find common ground. Friday night, if they're back here for an elimination game, not a game one, but, everything on the line, then I'm with you. Then I'll push him to 115, 120. I mean, I don't know what the number is if they say no more, but I'll meet you in the middle there. Not game one. I can't do it game one.
All right, I'll meet you in the middle there, because game five, I don't think it's coming back, but game five comes back, and we're in a position where he's at 111 pitches in the seventh inning, and I have to see the bullpen come in. I'm going to be a pretty ticked off fan, Dave. I feel like he did it with Sanchez too in game two. It's like, he's such an analytics guy. Dude, get a feel for the game and see what's going on in the game. Stop trying to be the smartest one on the field. I need you to get I personally put some of the blame on Bohm and how he's being such a Debbie Downer. Kind of put that on Topper, dude. When he comes into the dugout, you got to sit down with this kid and be like, yo, blank happens. You're in a little slump right now. We know what he can be. I'm with you, Hugh. I don't think there should be any sort of question if he's our starting third baseman. He proved that he can play. There was two plays in game two where I highly believe that if Bohm was in there, he would have made those plays. And they were early in the game. And they weren't game-changing. It didn't affect the outcome of the game, really. But it kind of does, because when your infield isn't making plays like that, you're putting too much pressure on your pitcher at that point.
Well, the one I think you're referencing was the error on Sosa, and that was a poor play. He's got to make a better throw there. The other one, and Dustin, we appreciate it. I thought Sosa made a good play, and the runner just beat it out. I don't think Bohm makes that play either. I mean, Hugh, the thing is, Topper has made this a thing now, right? Like, by sitting him down in game two, it's now we're all wondering, like, is that just a one-day thing, and he's back in today, and then the rest of the playoffs, we don't talk about this again, or is it day-to-day now? Topper created this. I was fine with it, but they got to deal with this now.
No, I don't think it's a day-to-day thing. And that's me strictly going off of the way Topper answered the question when he was asked about Bohm. You know, it felt to me like he just wanted to give him a breather. It didn't feel to me like it was egregious enough for them to say something like, "We don't believe in him anymore."
Well, you
I don't
can't
think it was
say that out loud.
Well, I didn't feel that.
Right, I get it.
But you know, when I listen to press conferences, a lot of times I go off of feeling because we don't know, and you know, because I know that there's a lot of conversation being had. But I didn't feel that. I didn't feel like that was the case when it came to Bohm.
So for me, actions speak louder than words, and his action was game two. After one game, he's out.
I don't think he wanted to let that game get out of hand either, though.
Yeah, but he took him out before the game. He sat him down, yeah. And then they needed the game. I have a weird feeling on this Bohm thing. I wonder if there's more that goes on that they see that we don't see. And I wonder, moving forward, if he's going to play every day in the playoffs. My sense right now is he's not. Unless he hits. I mean, obviously he hits. But, you know, this also could be a correction, Hugh, because last year we kept saying Topper was slow to adjust. Now, it might be an every day we play the best nine I feel today rather than...
It might be that. It might be a little bit of that.
Yeah, it might be an overcorrection towards
feel,
last year.
The feel for the game.
Let's go to Ed in Cherry Hill. What's up, Ed?
Hey, how are you?
Good, Ed. What's up?
Big question for me is, you guys beat on Turner, you beat on Castellanos, you beat on Marsh, now it's Bohm. Bohm's your future.
Future of what?
For the Phillies. I mean, who
I'm not sure about that, Ed. I'm not sure he is.
I don't understand. And let's go with
well,
with,
hold on. But let's go through it for a second. He's 28 years old. Okay. He's been here for years. They haven't given him a contract extension. Their number one prospect is a left side of the infielder. He might play short. He might play third. And they have a shortstop, obviously, that signed here for 9 more years. So I'm not sure Alec Bohm's the future. I mean, why are we sure of that?
I see him beginning of the season, he was great. Middle of the season, he was great. Everybody bottoms out once in a while.
Right. So, but I agree with you on that. But it's the playoffs, right? So if he's in the bottom part of his season, if he's bottomed out, why should he play every day?
Who are you going to replace him with?
Sosa or Clemens. I don't know. Whoever's hitting. I mean, this is like the conversation last week with Turner's defense. Is it about feelings or are we trying to win the World Series?
I think it's about I think it's a chess match.
Right, okay. Yeah, then we're on the same page there, right?
It's a chess match. It's a chess match.
Let me just say one more thing before we hang up. Mm-hmm. Topper's too quick to replace. I'm going to go with the guy that said, you should have kept Wheeler in. Wheeler won that game.
He had 111 pitches, though. How many more innings was it?
That's what he makes money for. That's what he gets paid for.
No, Ed, 111 pitches? How many pitches
are you going to let? Let's go with Sanchez.
He could have left Sanchez in one more inning. I'm with you. Ruiz gave up the home run. Yeah, we appreciate the call. 111? I mean, like, this is not 1975 anymore. These guys don't go 140 pitches in a game. Now, again, we get to Friday night, game five. I'm okay pushing him to 120 or above. Let's go. Let's go finish the series. All right, before we go any further here, we got to bring on a guest here, Hugh, on the guest line. His name is Evan Roberts. He is part of the afternoon show with Tiki Barber up in New York. We heard what he said about all of us, Philadelphia fans, everyone at Citizens Bank Park on Sunday, and maybe, I don't know if he was there Saturday too. And obviously, we got to get his take on the rest of the series. Evan Roberts from Evan and Tiki. Evan, what's up, man?
What's up, Evan?
Why are you groaning, Hugh? You heard him.
No. You know, Evan, to be honest, because I need some context of the stories that you were telling, man.
What happened?
It just kind of sounds like you were just, you know what I mean, man? It just don't sound like, you know, you just embellishing just a little
bit. Was
it
the Tug McGraw jersey? Is that what got everyone going?
Well, first, let me say that the first thing I said in describing my experience in Philadelphia
was that about 80 to 85% of you guys are classy. Now, I think that's a very low number. I think when you go to Citi Field today, if you do, that number's closer to like 95, 96%. But I do think the vast majority of you are passionate Northeast sports fans, and I respect that. But the 15% of you are just absolute scum. I ran into a lot of scum during my experience at Citizens Bank Park. Now, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I should have called you guys and said, hey, quick question. Should I take my wife, my 8-year-old, and my senior citizen dad to a playoff game? And you guys would have said no, and maybe I would have listened. So maybe it was my own fault for going. But, yeah, you got a lot of scum living in your city, and I experienced it, yeah.
Well, you made it out alive, right? Well, now, let's be fair.
Did anybody punch you in the back of the head?
Was it verbal or was it anything physical? Because the verbal,
no, you got to expect
the verbal, yeah.
Nothing physical.
Okay,
and look, it may not sound this way because I'm on the radio. We're on the radio. We're loud. We're excited. When the Mets had their moments, I respect being in a visitor's ballpark. So I'm not jumping up and down. I'm not screaming. I'm politely clapping. I'm cheering for my team. But I'm also not doing it in an obnoxious way. And I think the mistake that a lot of fans make is they go into someone's building and they're looking for trouble. I wasn't looking for trouble. We wore our Mets stuff and we were very respectful. But no one was physical, but I saw a lot of weird things. I mean, the guy behind me, I thought he was going to actually make love with his girlfriend right behind me. Like, they came very close. And my wife's like, should I say something? Our 8-year-old's right here. I was like, nah, don't just let them do what they got to do. It's not my problem, but it was fascinating to watch, that's for sure.
Well, to each their own. I mean, you don't get a rally like that very often.
What did he say? They were in the stands making out?
Well, almost, he said, yeah. Almost.
No. They were making out.
No, I was about to say, Joe, what is almost making out?
No, almost doing more than that.
They were making out. There was no almost. My wife was concerned it was going to go to the next level. She thought, oh, my God, like, he's just going to rip her clothes off. They're going to do it right there. And I said, look, if that happens, I'm sure security will take care of it. We're not getting involved.
You hope.
I give credit to girl's friend in the middle of this because I think they were both very inebriated. She said she got in the middle of it and said, look, I can't let this happen. And by the middle of it, I don't mean she got involved. I meant she split them up. But, yeah. Luckily, my 8-year-old didn't see any of it, though. I guess that would have been a good learning experience, right?
Well, it would have been something. Evan, let's talk about this series right now. So we're 1-1, heading back to Citi tonight. What's your feeling? We were discussing today who's in the driver's seat here. Evan, what do you feel on the series as the Mets take one, but then they lost the game that they could have had a lot of different ways in game number two? What are you feeling as we head to game three?
So the majority of Mets fans are very, very confident. All right, they believe this series is going to end at Citi Field. They love the fight that this team has shown, and they've shown a lot of fight throughout the regular season. I'm sure you guys have seen it, what they did in the Milwaukee series. My feeling walking out of that building, you know, after I survived and got into the car, was the disappointment of the missed opportunity. I mean, they had a 3-0 lead in the seventh inning. Severino was dealing. Then they responded immediately and retook the lead going into the eighth inning. And then dramatically, they freaking tie the game in the ninth inning. Like, to me as a Met fan, I don't have that same optimism everyone else has, because I feel like they missed an opportunity, that this should be 2-0 going back to New York. So the majority of Mets fans, and I think it's the excitement of hosting a division series game for the first time since 2015. It's been a long freaking time for us, unlike you guys who now go every single year. So I'm a little nervous. I'm a little like, damn, they missed this great opportunity to be up 2-0. But I'll tell you right now, the majority of Mets fans believe this thing is not going back to Philadelphia. I happen to disagree with them. I think for the Mets to win this series, they're going to have to go back into the belly of the beast. They're going to have to outlast Zach Wheeler in a game five and win there again. So that's how I feel. But I'm telling you right now, the Met fans I speak to, my fellow Met fans, they're borderline cocky.
I think you're right. It's going to take five. This feels like a five-game series to me. Evan, tell us about the shadows at Citi. It was a big thing here for the first two games. Philly's made an excuse after game one. They're swinging things in the dirt, and they're like, well, it's the shadows. It did feel like it affected both teams. Both teams had the better at-bats late in the game. Obviously, the big eighth inning for the Mets there in game one. Is that a big thing late afternoon at Citi Field? Because we're going to get these 5 o'clock starts next couple days.
Yeah, you know what's funny? We so rarely play 5 o'clock games. I don't even freaking know. I'm trying to think back to at this season. Like I said, we don't play playoff games. We've had so few of them. I think it's all a freaking excuse. I mean, go out there and hit. Like, to me, that wasn't an excuse in game one. Zach Wheeler was dominant. Zach Wheeler is a great pitcher. It still pains me that old ownership allowed him to go to Philadelphia. So, look, there'll be some shadows, but you got to deal with it. You know, Aaron Nola's been there before. Sean Manaea was pretty solid in his first postseason start. I don't think it's going to be a big factor at all.
Tell us about Minaya. He's had an interesting career. He's bounced around. I've always thought he could be pretty good, but never as good as he's been like this year. I mean, you watch him pitch this year. He looks like a different guy. Is he this good now? Is it just a hot run? Tell us about the Mets pitcher today.
So Sean Minaya started the season off by being very average, very typical of his major league career. Believe it or not, when the Braves were in town back in the early summer, he watched Chris Sale, was just staring at him as he was throwing. And it changed a lot of Sean Manaea's philosophies on the mound. And he started making adjustments in which he tried to copy Chris Sale, which other than, you know, being a wuss and having back spasms and not being able to pitch in a playoff game, obviously you want to imitate Chris Sale, the pitcher. And, dude, like from that moment, Sean Manaea has been a different guy. He's been an ace-like pitcher. Now, I don't think of him as an ace yet because I think you got to do a hell of a lot more than just pitch really well for a few months. But he has been a completely different guy since that line of demarcation of kind of changing his philosophy around Chris Sale. He didn't have a great playoff history until that game in Milwaukee where he was solid. He didn't go very deep in the game, but he was solid. I think the Mets are going to need him to go deep into this game because as much as the Mets have hit the Philly bullpen, you guys are starting to hit our bullpen. And there aren't a lot of guys in the circle of trust, as I like to say, with this Met pen. So I need more than five innings out of Sean Manaea, which is what he did when he pitched against Milwaukee back in game two of that wild card series. But he certainly has been a very different guy than he's been the last couple of years, and he's pointed to that experience of watching Chris Sale.
Yeah, he looks good. I don't even know what to do with the numbers I see, because a lot of the Phillies have good numbers often, but he just looks like a different guy. All right, let's end with this, Evan. Who's your most hated Philly right now? Because we do not like Vientos here, but that's really just based on performance. But Nimmo's the one. Nimmo and Alonso, people don't like him here. Give us your most hated Philly in this group. Who do you like?
It's not even close. And you guys, you eat out of his hands because you guys are a bunch of suckers down there. Bryce Harper is the biggest panderer in sports.
Well, we don't disagree with that, but he's right behind Gehrig and Ruth in postseason numbers.
He definitely
all he does is hit in October.
I respect him. I fear him. Trust me. Like, when he came up, I'm sitting there in the upper deck, 422, to be exact, where I was sitting at the bank on Sunday. When he came up, after Trey Turner got on, and it's a 3-0 game, I had the fear of God in me that he was with one swing going to bring him back in the game. So a lot of this is respect. And look, you guys obviously respect our guys because look at the guys you named. You hate Mark Vientos. Yeah, because Mark Vientos walked into your building in the 9th inning and hit a game-tying 2-run home run while you drunkards thought you were about to celebrate. Like, you respect him.
He sneaked this. He sneaked this.
I have respect for Bryce Harper. He's a great player. He's an incredible panderer. He has you guys eating out of his hands. Ooh, let me put the Philly fanatic bandana on. That'll really show him. Dude, if the Mets were owned by Steve Cohen and not Jeff Wilpon, he'd have a Mr. Met underwear going right now because he'd be a Met, not a Philly. It's not like he would have.
What pandering? Just because he referenced Rocky after the game? Are you talking about that?
That was a lot.
Yeah.
Though.
I mean, come on. Rocky, his Philly fanatic outfit. He's a kid who grew up in Vegas as a Yankee fan. Now he's Mr. Philly. Shut up with that. But I hate him, but it's a respect hate. He's an all-time great player. He puts the fear of God in me. And look, the Phillies, to me, this is my opinion, just as I'm being independent baseball mind. They are, as much as you guys and all you callers rip the team, this guy sucks, I think the Phillies are the best team in Major League Baseball, talent-wise. I do. I think they're better than the Yankees. I think they're better than those frauds in L.A. Like, this is the team to beat. I really believe that. I said that before the series. I say that now. You have a hell of a team. The problem is we're going to end your season, and then you're going to bitch about the bye like the Braves did. Losers.
Game 5, Wheeler on the mound. I know you're afraid of it. Evan, appreciate you hopping on, man. Enjoy the rest of the series.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
There he goes. Evan Roberts, WFAN up in here. He has a couple sneak disses.
He was sneak dissing. He was sneak dissing a little bit.
He doesn't want to see Wheeler in Game 5. I mean, you could feel that.
He definitely doesn't.
Yeah, he knows that's the one that got away
tonight.
For them.
Got to get it tonight. Got to have it tonight.
Because it's what I've been saying. Like, I say this at the risk of, I don't believe in jinxes, but there is no freaking way we lose the Wheeler versus bullpen game at Citizens Bank Park twice in a series. There's no way.
He's not giving up any runs to the Mets. They wouldn't even let him go to the 2015 World Series.
Still,
I said, buy your own tickets.
He's still fuming from that.
Of course he is.
Still fuming from that. Can't forget that.
You would be too. All right, 215-592-9494. Your phone call is coming up. We got a lot on the table here. Are the Phillies in the driver's seat? Trust Nola and his bone plan for his job. More audio from the Phillies on the environment in New York. What Schwarber said about that yesterday in your call. It's the Midday Show. Sports Radio 94 WIP. And let's talk about my friend, Dr. Rafi. Look, a lot of us, as we get older, our hairline, it goes, it disappears, it thins, it happens. I went to see an expert, the doctor I trust the most, Dr. Rafi at Precision Hair Restoration. He opened my eyes to the cutting-edge Artis IX robotic hair transplant. It's a procedure many should consider. Are you newly single, have an upcoming wedding or job interview, or just want your hair back? Call Dr. Rafi. He can help. 215-800-9100. That's 215-800-9100. And get your confidence back. Or visit PhillyHairMD.com.
Embrace it, right? Like, you know, that's why we're in the playoffs, right? And, you know, it's a hostile environment here for them. You know, I'm sure that, you know, and we enjoy the cheers, right? Now it's time for us to enjoy the loud, ruckus boos and why we're hitting, right? Like, that's the beautiful thing about postseason baseball. And, you know, now it's time for us to stop the cheers and see what happens.
Ah, Schwarber sounds ready for New York. Let's go. 215-592-9494. Your phone calls here as we debate who's in the driver's seat in this series. I still think it's the Phillies. Even though they lost the game at home and the Mets took back home field advantage, I still think it's the Phillies. And the Alec Boehm situation is really compelling. He's back in there tonight, but is he playing for his job? Should he be playing for his everyday spot? I think so. Let's discuss it all as we get set for game number three. Ross Tucker will join us at 12:30. We know Ross is excited for the Phillies, and we'll talk some Eagles as we get set to welcome them back this weekend against the dreadful Cleveland Browns. Will in the Northeast. Hey, Will.
Gentlemen, how y'all doing today?
Good, Will. What's up?
What's up, man?
Man, we in the driver's seat, man. Listen, just like the guy from New York Station said, they miss. And now we coming to collect our money. We're going to get them wins. What I really think is, you know, with the players that are struggling, you know, I think they need to play them, man. You know why? Because we lost together with them. And we was winning together with them. Sometimes, you know, when everything is said and done as a team, man, I think we're going to pull together, man. I think these guys need to play together and, you know, just play these guys, man. If they're not doing what they need to do, then pull them. But the other thing is, now, we're going to a different park. So it's not going to be as easy to hit it out the park. So we need to play some small ball. We need to just get some nice space hits. And, you know, bring some runners in and, you know, get some runners on base and bring them home, man, because, like, it ain't going to be easy to hit them homers like we was at our own park. You know what I mean? So we got to take that in consideration, too.
Of course. We need at-bats like we got in the eighth inning, right? The Stott at-bat, the Turner at-bat. You know, you go to the Castellanos single down the right field line. Like, that's what they need. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're going to be good, man, and if we win this, we're going to snatch the heart out of them and take it in New York, man.
If they get today, Will, well, I mean, here's the thing about today, and Will, we appreciate. Whoever wins today puts the pressure totally on the other team tomorrow.
Totally agree with that.
Because, you know, game five, you have that in your back pocket. You don't want to use it, right? You win today, you want to finish it out off of game four. But the Phillies know they have Zach Wheeler in their back pocket for game five. If they could get today's game, we're going to all exhale a lot because we know we got Wheeler.
It's going to feel so much better. We're going to be in a so much better position. And that's kind of how we're looking at it right now.
So I'm looking right now, and I agree with Will, that Citi Field is a more challenging park to hit home runs than Citizens Bank Park. It is, based on how many home runs were hit this year. So Citizens Bank Park is, I would say, one of the top five or so, top six in terms of home runs hit during the season. Citi Field, when it first debuted, was more of a pitcher's park. I think it's more middle of the pack now. It's like it's not impossible to hit home runs there, but it's also not as favorable as it is here. Amanda is in Hatboro. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
We're doing good. What's up today?
Long-time listener, first-time caller, die-hard Phillies fan.
Well, thank you.
To talk to you guys about a couple of things.
Go for it. We appreciate you listening.
All right. So before the series even started, I flat out said, talking to my husband, talking to my dad, my brother, we're all diehards, I said Phillies in five. Now, I anticipated taking two at home, but with that not happening, off we go to Citi Field. I feel like tonight with Nola on the mound, I'm very confident in him. I feel like this is the one we're going to take. So I'm crossing my fingers, and we'll get back here. Wheeler on the mound for the fifth one, win it at home.
Amanda, I feel the same way. I thought Phillies in five. I said that on Saturday before game one, that this would be a five-game series. I think the first two games maybe went the opposite of how I thought. I thought they'd win behind Wheeler and maybe lose game two. But either way, the good part, Amanda, is we have Wheeler in game five if we have to go to that game.
Absolutely agree. I also wanted to comment on Boom, because I have to agree with a lot of the callers, especially the one gentleman who had mentioned about bringing in Cody Clemens. Mm-hmm. I think Cody Clemens has kicked butt this season. Every time he comes in, he seems to be doing what needs to be done. I'm a big fan of Cody Clemens. I think we've got to give him a chance, because with Boom, he's always throwing a temper tantrum. He's always throwing that helmet and acting a fool. And it reminds me, when he does that, of what Cassidy said 3 weeks ago to the reporter after the Rays series when he got hit by the pitch. And he said, "That's like my two-year-old throwing a fit because I took away his dessert before he's finished." That's how Boom's acting. He's 29 years old. Grow up.
Yeah, he's not a kid anymore. You know, it's a couple years ago, man. It's a great phone call. And we appreciate you listening. A couple years ago, I accepted this with Boehm in the playoffs. He was a young player. You know, it was only second or third year in the major leagues at that point.
Not time to grow up.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, he was leading the National League in RBIs. He was hitting cleanup. We've now devolved to he's not the cleanup hitter anymore, and he got benched in game two. I think tonight is huge for him. He's facing a lefty. He typically hits lefties. If he hits tonight, he plays tomorrow, and we go from there, and we hope it's an uptick. I just am not married to the idea he's got to play every day in the postseason. 215-592-9494. Your phone calls in the 12 o'clock hour. Ross Tucker will join the conversation at 12:30. And on the other side, I heard something a lot during yesterday's show, and I want to reopen that discussion next, because there seems like there's a feeling out there, and I don't get it. We'll talk about it all as we get ready for Game 3 on Sports Radio 94 WIP. You ready, Hugh?
I'm ready.